Good morning. Just before I begin, I'd like to thank the Reed Trust for funding my travel here to this conference. And I'd like to begin by asking how many of you have heard of Bill Mason before? Okay, so maybe a little bit less than half of you. I'm going to talk a little bit about ecological virtue first. And the idea of this paper came from a paper that Stephen Blumhardt-Prediger published about 2 years ago in 2016. And he said that recently there's been increasing knowledge written about ecological virtue, but not much of a Christian perspective. So virtue ethics has to do with what type of person should I be. It has to do with our character. And so Blumhardt-Prediger suggests that cultivation of certain virtues is necessary for us to address ecological problems. And he thinks that it's good that we have models or exemplars. In his paper, he gives the example of Mother Teresa as someone of virtue, but he doesn't actually give an example of someone who would inspire us in terms of ecological virtues. So I want to explore this paper then is whether Bill Mason might be a Christian exemplar of ecological virtue. For those that haven't heard of him, he's a Canadian canoeist, filmmaker, and artist. He published a book on canoeing, on camping. This book is a book of his paintings. There's a children's book on wolves. This is his feature film, Water Walker. In total, he made about 20 films. The first one was for University Christian Fellowship, and most of the rest were with the National Film Board, the last one in combination with Imago. And maybe you are not aware that you actually saw one of them. Many of you may have seen Paddle of the Sea or Rise and Fall of the Great Lakes in school and not realize it was one of his films. Although he died 30 years ago this fall, he's been recognized with Canadian Postage Stamp, and then also most recently in 2009, he was inducted in the National Whitewater Hall of Fame. So he still is known, and recently last year, actually in our community, the 50th anniversary of Paddle of the Sea was celebrated. Now, numerous people have written about him. One is his biography by Jim Rathen, Fire in the Bones. I feel that really doesn't do justice to his Christianity. And then Bill Rathen has also written about his canoeing. His cameraman, Ken Buck, wrote a book on him as an artist. And in 2007, I published a paper on his environmental ethic, which is a Christian environmental ethic. I worked on a paper on his play ethic. And so there's a fair bit of publication about him. And Ken Buck in his book wrote, "Few people of any nation have been so influential in creating a sense of responsibility for the environment." So why is that? Is it possible this relates to his ecological virtues? So that's what we're going to explore today. The method I used was that I reread a number of times his various books, which I was familiar with, and also his film Water Walker, but there's also been interviews with him in Parks Journal, and also shortly before his death, two different documentaries, film documentaries, were made about him. And so I look at this material again and again and again, looking for themes that would try and explain his ecological virtues. And so I just explained that, how I have reread, kept looking at the films, and I used Stephen Blumhardt-Prediger's framework of 14 ecological virtues. My wife and I host the Rasha events in Ottawa, and so Stephen was at our house in January of last year and gave a presentation on ecological virtues, which is a chapter in his book, The Beauty of the Earth. And so he starts with biblical stories, comes up with theological motifs, and then ethical principles, which lead to these virtues. Each of these virtues have vices of efficiency and excess. So this is what I'm going to focus on here, these 14 virtues, and use these 14 virtues as a framework as I review the literature and films of Bill Mason. Now, it's important to recognize one's bias. So I need to mention that I knew Bill Mason, from probably somewhere between 5 and 10, I first met him at one of the churches we went to in Ottawa. I was at his house many times as part of the youth group, the college and career groups, and a varsity group in the 70s. I also played hockey with him in Ottawa at university. Saturday nights, hockey with the church group before I came west. And then when I moved back to Ottawa after being out west for a while, I played hockey about a year before he died. And he could still skate circles around me, even though he's 30 years older than I am. And so then what do we come up with in terms of the 14 ecological virtues of Bhuma Pretikar? So Bhuma Pretikar's first virtue is that of respect. It acknowledges and regards someone's God-given value. So what you see again and again in Bill's writings, he talks about moral obligation, that the animals are created by God and that they have a right to exist, and their right to exist is an intrinsic right on their own. This second virtue is receptivity, accepting our kinship with others, both humans and non-humans, embracing a mutual dependence. And in some of his writings, he talks about looking around at the world around him and marveling at it, looking and listening to what God has said through his creation. He talks about how it almost took him a lifetime to do that. Probably the best example of kinship is that he made three films on wolves. And for that, he kept wolves in the area adjacent to his house in Meech Lake in Gatineau Park. Three wolves, and he was able actually to film the birth of wolf pups. So I encourage you, if you ever have a chance, to look at his videos on that. Now, if I get this right, I have a video here which is going to show his kinship with wolves.
Charlie's failure to lead his pack in the killing of a caribou was a great disappointment to me. And as the weeks went by, he never did get the hang of it. I began to realize that wolves are not born with the killer instinct, but have to be taught to kill by their parents. I just didn't have the heart to starve them any longer. My wolves were just as dependent on me as I was dependent on the world of man.
While the caribou looked on, Bill prepared to take his wolves back to the Gatineau Hills, back home, where they had a greater chance of survival.
I'm very disappointed that my fellow...
I think that shows his kinship with other species. Okay, the third virtue is self-restraint, moderation, temperance, control appetites. So my earliest recollection when he came to church, he didn't have fancy clothes, he was in shorts, plaid shirt, that's the way he lived. A lot of these quotes have to do with the type of car. In the 1960s, they experimented with Land Rover, and he only kept it for a couple of years because it was way too much for him to maintain. So then his approach was to use the oldest cars possible, and when they would wear out, no longer roadworthy, he put a piece of plywood on and plow his 400-meter driveway. And so he wants a car that nobody is going to steal if we leave it to the trailhead. Of course, he wouldn't bother buying all the high-tech stuff that we have now. Here's his canoe carriers. He bolted it right onto the fenders. And so you can see he was very frugal. Also, this virtue involves self-restraint. In one of his books, he talks about being in Banff town site for one day. He was only there for one day. He had no vehicle. Was he going to hike up Mount Rundle or Sulphur Mountain with the gondola? And he chose going up Mount Rundle for primitive type of travel. There's a parable in one of his books, which I read in my class. It talks about being on a lake. And you could choose to walk around, it may take you 4 days, or you could get a ride in a canoe, maybe take you a day, or a motorboat, it may take you 4 hours. And the idea is the primitive forms of top travel allow you to observe and see the natural world. And then this last quote talks about he prefers to get to those places that are more distant via primitive travel as opposed to more mechanized travel, because actually those places are often the most beautiful places to be. Frugality, Wilbur Sutherland, as some of you may have heard of, at his funeral, Bill Mason said that Bill wasn't rich financially. He made a lot of his own props use in his filmmaking, homemade animation table. Here's a waterproof camera that he made with a flotation of the camera, encased it, And this is a paddle to the sea, but he used this in his canoeing films as well. He had a hockey stick. You may have seen in Water Walker, he's going down the rapids, and it's because the hockey stick is between his legs, and the camera's up here. Something made himself. This is for Wilderness Treasure, the university film. And so he's off in the wilderness by himself, and he's able to pull the string and cause the camera. So also, he scrimped. So he got a per diem from National Film Board when he was out filming, but he would really scrimp on his accommodation and food, and because of that, he was able to save money and make more films. So he was able to make a third Wolf film because of doing this, and he had four canoeing films, and was able to make the feature canoeing film because he did these types of things, which all reflect reality. Then humility, self-knowledge, limits of one's knowledge, unpretentiousness. And so one of the things I think is illustrating this is that he may not always agree with croppers and hunters, but the hunters and trappers were more interesting individuals and more cooperative than scientists. So he didn't necessarily put down people that environmentalists might put over there in another camp. And the other thing is disability is seen as his relationship with the native people. And all these quotes here talk about that we can learn much from native land and their close relationship to land. This is from his book, Canoe Scapes. It's a painting of Devil's Warehouse Island in Lake Superior. And he said that the white settlers called it Devil's Warehouse, but the native people saw it as the chair of the creator, the great spirit, and that they would have a much more harmonious relationship than the white people that traveled through this area. So again, indicating his humility that his view wasn't necessarily, his Christian view or perspective wasn't necessarily the best always, but he was willing to consider that of other people. Sixth, honesty, refusal to deceive others, oneself or God, sincerity and transparency. And so in all these statements, he's saying something about we've really messed up, we're ruining the creation, but you notice he says, we have to destroy something. We have become solely committed to change our environment. We have turned the air, water, and land into chemical soup. All of us. So he's including himself. He's not saying other people out there. He's saying, he's being honest. I'm part of it. And then this last one, if I can get the clip up here, this isn't a great clip because it didn't record properly, but there's going to be a gap. But it'll hopefully give you his perspective on this issue.
I'm very disappointed that my fellow Christians do not have a natural love.
A little blank space here.
Compassion for the natural world. As Christians, we tend to think of, well, we got to get on by saving souls, you know, and that's all that matters. But, you know, have.
So he was honest about Christians. The Christians always didn't have it right. And then before he died, in some of his letters, he's talking about what a mess I'll be leaving the earth in. And he talks about it's because of our alienation from God and it's caused by us. So he recognizes he's part of the problem. Another virtue Will Predator talks about is wisdom. This recognizes God as the center of things. The flourishing comes from God. And again, Mason's writing talks about the creator put it all together. God really knew what he was doing. Nature is the glorious fullness of God's creation, and then that God who created all this died for me. And he recognizes that many of our society then are even debating the creator's existence. Hope. Christians hope because they worship a God who keeps covenant with creation. So you see in his writings, he talks about my optimism. Again, these come from letters shortly before he died. My optimism is rooted in my faith that God has not forsaken us. My optimism is rooted in my faith that God has not forsaken us. My relationship with God is in his son, Jesus Christ. And with a relation like that, there's really not a lot that can go wrong. So even though he realizes leaving the world in a mess, there's lots of problems, he has optimism, he has hope. Patience. Patience presupposes a long view. And so I talked about already the parable. So obviously, if you're going to hike around versus the motorboat, that takes some patience. Then he had a lot of patience in the Water Walker feature film. So I saw many versions of that Water Walker film in the 1970s when I was at his house, that it came out west for 5 years. And the film came out in 1986 in the fall. So it took a lot of patience to arrive at that film. Serenity, unruffled peacefulness, inner calm, and that realizing that God is the one that's going to ultimately going to bring about hope for creation. And so in that, you have the peacefulness, inner calm. Before we die again, we live and cherish each day at a time. I want to spend as much time as I can painting, writing, smelling the flowers, and watching the clouds. And this is an idea that I explore in the paper I've written on his play ethic, where he talks about how there's all sorts of terms we use, fun and recreation and so on. He thinks the most important term is that of joy. I think joy is related to this peacefulness and inner calm. This is from his film, Song of the Paddle. We're just going to watch a very brief part of it.
Rapidly beautiful lakes in the world. With 300 miles of open water to the northwest, the direction from which the prevailing winds blow, even the windless days are some without waves. It's no place to be if you're in a hurry.
Time joined with Sultan, by losing shoreline. Far from the sound of the sea, it's more creepy water and sand. So let it go, let it fly. Let your song reach from the water to the wide blue sky.
So this film in particular just shows the joy of family life. And even though there's environmental problems, he still has time to have a sense of serenity, calmness, and joy. Benevolence is another virtue Bruno Bartier talks about, the will to do good to people, present and future, animals, and ecosystems. He encouraged people to engage in no-trace camping, encouraged people to share the earth. He wanted to awaken love and compassion people for the land and have them become active supporters of environmental organizations. Love is another virtue. Caring for others, which include places, rivers, and forests. And you see in his writings, he talks about my love, the wolf in the land, my concern for the land. I was so in love with the land. He wanted to rediscover that love and compassion for the native people talked about. And then compassion for our fellow human beings and for all of the living things. Justice, to act impartially and fairly. So I couldn't find very much evidence in his life or writings about this, but sort of goes back to what's talking about humility. And so he says, environmentalists are often perceived as being against all forms of progress, but basically he's against stupidity and greed. And he recognizes that people need to make livings through logging, mining, tourism, and hunting. So therefore, it wasn't just there had to be some sort of justice. People made living different types of ways, and so that needs to be recognized. So that was the only thing I could find really about justice. Courage, moral strength, and tenacity. And so one of the problems of making his Water Walker feature was trying to get the Christian element in, because the film was partly sponsored. Paid for by National Film Board. And so this is in Rathen's biography of him. By the time the canoe feature had gone around a couple of dozen times, Jill oversaw him at the film board. She and most of the other women in Studio D were sick to death of the way in which Mason clung so tenaciously to his Christian faith. So in other words, he had a lot of courage and tenacity to make sure that there was Christianity it expressed in his film. And here's a couple of segments of the Christianity in it.
The recording on it, I must honor his words to nature.
I find it interesting that it's the words of those great Indian leaders that have sent me digging through my cultural and spiritual origins for guidance on how to relate to the earth. There's a beautiful piece in Job that says, Ask the animals and they'll teach you, or the birds of the air and they'll tell you, or speak to the earth and it will teach you, or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind. I really like that.
So here's the quote he just gave. It's from Job 12:7-10. And then another illustration of how Christianity can
go to the water walk the last few years. So there you are. Film can be deceiving. But when it comes to the beauty of the world out here, the camera is not mine. I've shared with you many of my favorite places. And I've shared them because I think the only hope for what's left of the natural world is to rediscover that love and compassion for it that many people talk about. And I think that's possible because God created us with the ability to do the impossible. When Jesus called Peter to walk to him across the water, Peter was doing just fine until all of a sudden he remembered that people aren't supposed to be able to do that. And he began to sink. I think we've just forgotten how to walk on water.
So in terms of discussion and conclusion, the previous paper that I wrote and published in 2007 on his verbal ethic had to do primarily with ideas, and but he really wasn't the person that wrote philosophically about the environment. It was a person really that lived rather than talked about his Christian environmental ethic. And so I think that approach is consistent with a virtue ethics approach. So I think we could possibly argue then that Bill Mason would be a good exemplar for a Christian ecological ethic. Now, as I showed, he doesn't necessarily illustrate all of the virtues to the same extent. I didn't find very much about justice, but some of them he does illustrate quite extensively. And so I guess I'm arguing that he is a good exemplar that could be used. I conclude with this slide. But this is what different people wrote about him. His biographers talked about embodying a spiritual excitement that drew people. Trudeau Sr. wrote about Mason being awestruck by the beauty of nature. His pastor in Ottawa said he had a message that came through in the vitality of his speaking and his living. And then this is a very interesting quote from the director of production, the National Film Board, in which he basically says, there's many other filmmakers at the film board that can make films just as good or technically better, but what really came out was the human factor, his own humanness somehow comes through. I think that has to do with his character, with his ecological virtues or his virtues in general. Thank you, and any questions?
This isn't a question, it's just an observation. I came across Bill Mason, I mentioned him so much, I started an environmental studies program at Seattle Pacific in 1974, a long time ago, and there were no films. I mean, there were a lot of environmental films. I spent days at the University of Washington Film Library looking through a whole range of environmental films. Most of them pretty depressing, you know, like Sierra Club films, oil-soaked ducks and bulldozers doing things. And I came across a Death of a Legend and a Bowhead Whale film. And no, not a mention of Christianity. But I knew, man, this guy's got to be a Christian. That these ethics come through. That it's a warmth, there's a kind of, something quite remarkable about his presence. And then later when I came to region, I discovered, you know, I was a Christian. But of course, it was just, it's communicated. And your ethics thing makes it pretty strong. Why that happens?
Well, he was not a somber environmentalist. There was that joy. I really encourage you to watch Song of the Paddle with his whole family. It's just like wonderful family experience. But in Ottawa, it would be at a presentations, and you'd fill auditoriums, and you could just, it was just a joy and enthusiasm came through as you interact with people. Yeah, but then you really got people concerned about the environment and to do something about it. But as you say, it was not sort of negative. Everyone felt a little warmth and excitement about it.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm not familiar with Bill Mason at all, since I've been lately. A few years back, I got to go to Kemah National Park in Alaska, and I met the guy who shot the bear that killed Timothy Treadwell. And I don't know if you're familiar with this case, Werner Herzog's movie Grizzly Man, where you have a guy who's also intimately desiring to connect with the natural world. He's very passionate about this. He befriends foxes and these sorts of things, but you see, it's psychologically crazy. Anyway, and I don't know if this is Herzog's pessimism of human nature, if it's a fair assessment of Treadwell or not, but I wonder about Treadwell's almost a counterpoint to Bill Mason. But on the other hand, this methodology, you could almost apply virtue ethic to the things that Treadwell did. He also connected with the natural world. So I just wonder how your methodology could distinguish between ethic and psychopathology.
I'm not sure if I answer that question, but I mentioned I saw various versions of the film at his house in the 70s, and you know, he was wanting to have it. I mean, some of his earlier films were nominated for Oscars, Looking for Down LA and so on, but you know, it seemed he had to have some storyline that the bear was shot to get a film that was going to get a lot of exposure, and he didn't want to do that. So that's why he kept going through so many different versions. How could he get a movie that could communicate his environmental ethic without turning into sort of a Hollywood movie where there's a scene like that? So, I'm not familiar with the person you're talking about, but I guess the thing is just to go through that person's life. Any writings by other people, or movies themselves, and just take these 14 ecological virtues as to move a predator and see, well, how well do they match up?
Or counter. Interesting exercise.
Mm-hmm. More questions, more discussion.
Yeah. There's a lot of often that. I wonder if some, I don't know this movie either, but I wonder if some of the excesses of the virtues that I read.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, in this presentation, I didn't go into the excess. I mean, I know Bill Mason well enough that he has some access. maybe that's something I'm hoping maybe I will publish a paper on this. And so I think that's a good idea, in addition to seeing what is there that fits with the 14 virtues. Are there some excesses or deficiencies? Yeah. Good point.
Just thinking, Rise and Fall of the Great Lakes, in my opinion, has become a cult classic. There's a lot of people that really enjoy it and watch it again and again through generations. Is there some aspect of Mason's ethic that feeds into the reason for that, or perhaps I'm incorrect in that evaluation?
Well, I think one of the in that is humor, right? And one of the key points in that is when so it's Blake, the person that film, there's another film called Blake, and he actually played hockey with us as well. He did his little cabin in the woods, and he was an airplane pilot. So Blake's all about being an airplane pilot, this very small biplane. But he was a goalie, so he used to come play hockey occasionally. But so in the scene up in Lake Superior near the area where there's pulp mills, he's traveling along, and he puts his cup in a big drink of water, and then he puts up his mouth, not realizing that it has all the pollution in it. And so, I mean, part of the way that communicated was the way in which it was done, I think.
Good. Well, I see the clock, and the session with Arnold Sakima is something they want to attend, but we have certainly been blessed by a real exposition of ecological stewardship and virtue through the fish, through the soapberries, through the witness of Bill Mason, and the three speakers we really need to thank once again. And I also should commend the audiovisual technician who has made these presentations ran very, very smoothly, and that doesn't happen by itself. And so we really need to thank the people behind the scenes who caused that to occur. So it's been a wonderful session, and some of us may want to hear Arnold, so we should really break off now. Thank you very much.